You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll look at how well mental health services are working in Wisconsin schools and how they could be improved. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Molly Stenz joins me. As a WPR listener, you know you're always going to hear something interesting when you tune in, and that's thanks to your support. Listeners provide the largest share of funding for WPR programs. When you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make this program and everything else you hear on WPR possible.
Last hour, we heard from 11 donors. Thank you to everyone who gave. But guess what? The clock has turned over. We've got a new hour. We've got a new goal, and that is 10 gifts this hour. These goals are so that we make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money to pay for the programs that you rely on.
Let's meet this goal. It happens one gift at a time. Let's start with yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, Rob, sometimes people wonder, what does public radio mean? Public radio means listener-supported radio.
While we do appreciate things like business contributions and federal and state tax dollars, listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs. Your gift of any amount really does matter at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And here's something else to sweeten the deal. Today, we're bringing back the WPR long sleeve t-shirt. It's a navy shirt. It's got the WPR logo on the front and a Wisconsin design on the back. You can show your pride when you ask for your WPR long sleeve t-shirt. Give $20 a month or more. You can do that online, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552.
It can be tough to keep up with all the stuff going on in the state, around the country, and around the world. Well, no matter what's going on in your life or in the news, WPR is always here for you. You can count on us for programs that are both enlightening and entertaining.
It's a two-way relationship. We're here when you need us, and you step up with the support that makes it all possible. You can do that now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is your radio station, your companion, the one that wakes you up in the morning, rides with you on your commute, keeps you company during the day.
And the beautiful thing is that you get to decide how much to pay for the programs you enjoy. Many first-time donors give $100. You can also give $10 a month. You can pick the amount that's right for you.
And then your gift, along with donations from other listeners, they get pooled together and they add up to WPR's largest source of funding. Join the team right now. Make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Got about 50 minutes left this hour. We're looking for 10 people to join in and make WPR possible. When you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Today, only support the programs you value and ask for your WPR long sleeve shirt. Got a light blue Wisconsin-inspired design and a soft navy shirt. Perfect for all your favorite winter activities. Ask for yours with a gift of $20 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're not a sustainer, now is the time. Become one right now. It's so easy to set up. You'll make ongoing monthly donations. You can do that from a bank account, from a credit card. You can do that online at WPR.org. You can do that by calling 888-202-2552. Provide reliable support for the programs you love.
Mark in Denton, Texas says WPR is a great way to stay up to date with all things Wisconsin, even when you're not there. Thanks for the long distance dedication, Mark. Emily in Madison says we are and have been for years diehard public radio listeners felt it was time to increase our sustaining contribution. Emily, thanks a lot for that. How about you? How much does the Ideas Network factor into your daily routine? How much do you count on us for great conversations and information and companionship as you go about your day? Put a value on that, then make your very important gift. You can give now online at WPR.org or make a phone call. Call 888-202-2552. It takes just a few minutes of your time. Thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Schools around Wisconsin and the country have seen greater mental health needs among students since the beginning of the pandemic. This week, a national mental health campaign put out a report evaluating each state on their policies that support mental health in schools. The Hopeful Futures campaign ranked Wisconsin 11th in the country for its youth mental health policies across categories like funding supports, school climate, staff training, and community partnerships. But the report found room for improvement, especially when it comes to access to social workers and counselors in mental health treatment. We're learning more about what mental health programs are in place in Wisconsin schools, how they're funded, where they could be improved, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a parent, a student, or work at a school, do you see enough access to mental health treatment and counseling? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Katie Eklund is an associate professor in the University of Wisconsin-Madison's School Psychology Program. She co-directs the School Mental Health Collaborative, a research center on campus. Katie, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Happy to be here.
I know this was a concern even before the pandemic, but how much has the pandemic raised the need, the awareness of mental health issues facing kids in schools?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we know that one out of every five students before the pandemic would be likely to experience some type of mental health concern from the time, sometime between preschool and when they graduate from high school. And so certainly there's a large amount of need in schools, and that has really been exacerbated by the pandemic. I think things like kids not having access to their friends, a lack of social connectedness with others and connection to adults, certainly has increased rates of mental health concerns. So educators are definitely faced with challenges in trying to meet some of these needs in schools.
Can you talk about the role of different types of staff at schools? A school psychologist, school social workers, school counselors, different jobs, all part of the picture here. Can you tell us how they all fit in?
Yeah, there are many different school-employed mental health professionals that can help meet and address children's needs. I myself worked as a practitioner for 10 years in schools, first as a school social worker, and then later as a school psychologist, and really see that these are critical and important needs within schools. Each of them work together on teams. Some communities have access to one role more than another, but counselors, social workers, and psychologists all work together in tandem to best meet children's mental and behavioral health needs.
Do we have enough of them, those different types of roles in schools? This report I just referenced suggests no in Wisconsin. They have recommended numbers of, say, psychologists per student, and they say Wisconsin falls short in some of these categories.
Yeah, Wisconsin actually falls short in all three categories, unfortunately. The national recommended ratio for school psychologists is one school psychologist to every 500 students. Our state mean right now is 1,500, one professional to 1,500 students. So we're probably three times the recommended ratio as you think about school psychologists. That number is actually worse for school social workers. The recommended ratio is one school social worker to every 250 students. And our state mean is one social worker to about 2,000 students. We have similar challenges when we think about school counselors as well. So Wisconsin certainly, I don't think is unique compared to national averages that are out there. We look very similar to the national average, but we do face a shortage of these professionals to be able to step in and help fill the shortages and meet the needs of students in schools.
At his State of the State address this week, Governor Evers announced a $15 million investment in schools' mental health programs. Here's a listen.
Every public school district can opt in to receive these funds, no matter how big or how small. With this investment, kids in every corner of our state will have increased access to mental health support through their schools, on top of investments we've made in our budgets. Schools will be able to use these funds to provide direct mental health care, hire and support mental health navigators, provide mental health first aid and trauma-based care training, or provide family assistance programs, whatever our kids need.
We mentioned some of those professionals there. Mental health first aid, trauma-based care training. Can you talk about the roles those could play in schools?
Yeah, mental health first aid really focuses on training individuals and schools and youth-facing agencies to be able to recognize signs and symptoms of mental health concerns that kids might be experiencing. I'd say over the last decade, we've done a better job of training teachers and those who work with children on how to recognize some of those signs and symptoms. Here in Wisconsin, we've been fortunate to receive a Project Aware grant. The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction was one of many states that received Project Aware funds with a goal to increase kids' access to mental health services by not only offering those services at school, but also increasing referral pathways to community services. So again, the overall goal there is to increase the number of kids and families that can access care.
We're talking about mental health in schools here in Wisconsin with UW-Madison School Psychology Professor Katie Eklund. You can join in if you have a question or maybe an experience to share as a student, a parent, or a teacher. Call it at 800-642-1234 or one of those professionals we've been talking about, a psychologist, counselor, social worker in a school. 800-642-1234 is the number. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about mental health programs and resources in Wisconsin schools. Katie Eklund stays with us, a school psychology professor at UW-Madison. Katie, I wonder if you might be able to share some advice for parents who have concerns about the overall mental well-being, the emotional well-being of their kids. Maybe not that acute emergency situation, but just like, you know, over the last month or two or year or two, they're a little worried about what they're seeing. Where can they start?
Yeah, we hear from a lot of parents who have concerns, especially over the last year or two, given the challenges the pandemic has posed. And I'd say, you know, my advice to parents is to make those connections early on with your child's school. You know, as a former school psychologist, we work to build partnerships early on with parents. Certainly, hopefully you're a part of a school community that's made those connections early on. But reaching out, knowing that there are school mental health professionals at your school who are willing to step in and assist, whether that's a school psychologist or social worker, individuals in your school are trained to address some of these concerns. So making those connections early on, I think, are helpful. Certainly, we want school to be a safe place for kids. A lot of times we think about mental health as only encompassing when kids are having challenges or concerns, but we also want kids to be able to experience mental wellness, right? To be thriving, to experience success at school and in life. And so I think when parents can really make those positive connections at school, that certainly can pay off in the long run. But if you have a child who's experiencing concerns now, being able to reach out to the school to see what ideas and supports they might be able to provide. And oftentimes they are able to also link parents with community connections. So services in the community that could be a benefit not only to the child, but also to the family at large.
Are there things school leaders can do to create that mental wellness framework you just mentioned, as opposed to just dealing with problems, which I know is also important?
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important pieces is promoting a positive school climate. So I think when we think about mental health supports, certainly those universal or school-wide supports are key. That includes aspects of student belonging. When we think about student safety at school, not only thinking about physical safety, but emotional safety. Do kids experience that in their classroom or school? Making sure that kids have access to things like social-emotional learning in their classroom, where they're learning basic coping and problem-solving skills. And then certainly encouraging schools to do things like screening and early identification. So if we, similar to how we have vision or hearing screenings in school or academic screenings, what does that look like for behavioral or mental health concerns so that we can recognize those signs early and be able to help provide outreach to students who might be demonstrating concerns early on?
I want to look at rural Wisconsin a little bit, Katie. I've talked on the show over the years about sometimes a lack of access to mental health care treatment in a lot of rural communities. To get access, you might have to drive a pretty long way to get it. Also, I've heard from rural school districts that, you know, there are different specialties in teaching that they have a hard time, recruiting people to do. Do those problems come together at schools? Are we having trouble getting psychologists, counselors, social workers in those rural districts?
Yeah, we absolutely are. Certainly, rural school districts do employ school psychologists, social workers, and counselors, which is excellent. Oftentimes, we find that school-employed mental health professionals are sometimes the only services that kids might have access to in the community. But we do see shortages there as well. We've seen the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction really work to outreach to rural schools. They've received a number of state and federal grants to increase services around the state to be able to fulfill positions in places where individuals might not have thought to work before. And so I think some of these initial state and federal grants have really helped. It certainly hasn't solved the problem, but at least have provided some initial steps to increase access to services in rural communities.
And we've talked about creating a school of mental wellness, a community of mental wellness at schools, some about dealing with maybe more long-term problems with kids. What kind of things do we need in place for that moment of crisis for students? Hopefully, you don't get there in the first place, but when it happens, what can schools be ready to do to deal with that acute moment?
Yeah, so I really think about services within schools as being a public health framework that we think about not only those universal supports, but what happens in between. We know that kids might be in crisis or they might be experiencing challenges or barriers to learning at school. So again, I think we often just consider what are physical needs like vision or hearing concerns or what might be academic challenges that kids are facing in the classroom. But certainly, we also know that behavioral or social emotional challenges can be an additional and important barrier to learning. I really think schools can not only, as we've talked about today, employ more mental and behavioral health providers, but also increase their connections to community agencies. We have a lot of excellent services here in Wisconsin. Of mental health services in the community. And certainly, we've increased mental health referral pathways so that if there's a need that can't be met at school, that we have mental health agencies and referrals that kids and families can access in the community at large as well.
As we wrap up, Katie, is there one thing that you would say if asked by a policymaker, a school administrator, hey, what is the one number one urgent top priority we can do to boost the mental and emotional well-being of our kids in schools?
Oh, great question. One, I'd say encouraging school districts to prioritize funding and time for mental and behavioral health services to kids, and really thinking about how we might provide state and federal funds that would offer tuition remission for those who elect to pursue careers in the mental health field. So I threw two in there, but
Sure.
hopefully you see how those two things might go together.
Katie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Yes, no problem. Thanks for the invitation.
That's Katie Eklund, Associate Professor in the University of Wisconsin-Madison's School Psychology Program. She was with us today to talk about what kinds of mental health resources and programs are available in Wisconsin schools. Coming up, President Biden announced yesterday that Russia could invade Ukraine, quote, in the next several days. We take a closer look at Russia's latest moves and statements with an expert in the politics of that country. Now, Molly Stentz joins me for the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Our goal in this drive is to make sure that you keep getting your favorite programs like Central Time.
And your gift of any amount is so important because your support provides the largest piece of the funding here at WPR. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Almost halfway through the hour, looking now for eight more people to give in that next half hour. Your gift right now really is important because when you give, you support the programs you rely on each and every day.
And hey, thank you if you've already given. If you haven't, the time is now. Give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
That last conversation we looked at, a national story. This big report came out on mental health, mental well-being in schools. We focused in on what's going on here in Wisconsin with somebody who's worked in this field for a long time, got up close personal experience and some research to back it up. It's the kind of conversation you can count on here on Central Time.
WPR is listener supported. That means it's really your donation that makes all of the topics possible every day here. Choose an amount that works for you and make your gift.
Now that you've made the decision to support Wisconsin Public Radio, you might be looking for the best way to make your gift. The answer, become a sustainer. That way you decide on a monthly amount to be charged to your bank account or your credit card, and you set it up then to be ongoing.
This is such a good point. A sustaining gift is this powerful way of donating because it's reliable funding for the programs you count on every day. You make an easy-to-pay monthly gift, and those donations add up to a big impact here. You choose the amount. Could be $10, could be $20. Become a sustainer right now. You can do that online, WPR.org, or give us a call. 888-202-2552.
You tune into the Ideas Network, and every time you hear something compelling, the Ideas Network, it's a unique service here in Wisconsin. Not every state does this with their public radio system. It's got a lot of programs that you can be proud of.
They're available on WPR because listeners like you join together to support them. Be part of the community that makes this unique resource possible when you give at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
Maybe giving $1 a day is the right amount for your Wisconsin public radio listening. When you think about it, that's a really good value. You get a lot of radio for, you know, less than the price of a cup of coffee or a soda or a day of cell phone service.
Dollar a day, what is that, like $30 a month? You can set up as a monthly transfer, comes out of your bank account. You could charge it to your credit card. We try to make it easy. Make your gift now. Any amount that's right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Looking for 7 more people now to support WPR programs the next half hour to meet our goal. WPR is listener powered. That's why your gift now is so important at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Today only, support the programs you value and ask for that WPR long sleeve t-shirt. It's a navy shirt. It's got the WPR logo on the front, Wisconsin inspired design on the back. When you give $20 a month or more, ask for yours, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You count on us for great conversations each and every day here on the Ideas Network. We really do count on you to help make it possible, to help pay for it. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Vice President Kamala Harris is in Munich, Germany, meeting and talking with other world leaders about the military tensions at Ukraine's border with Russia. President Biden just spoke to the nation, warning of a very likely war in possibly the next few days. We'll get the latest on what's happening with that potential international conflict. Right now, Molly Stentz joins me for our winter member drive. Your support is the foundation of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. It's the largest piece. It's what makes the Ideas Network your go-to place for great conversations. We're here now to encourage you to make your gift in support of programs that you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When 7 more people join in over the next 25 minutes, we will make our goal. We are getting there so close. When you give, you are funding Central Time. You are funding all of the WPR programs you count on. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Join us every day on Central Time from 3 to 6 o'clock, and you get a wide range of topics to help you with the commute home. Just today, we're hearing about, of course, the latest from Russia and Ukraine, an effort to change the bail system here in Wisconsin. Great cooking tips on Food Friday, an example of the variety you get every day on Central Time.
And it's because of you. Your support makes all of this news and information and conversations possible. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Everyone should make the gift that works for them. For you, that might be a gift of $100 or $200 a month.
Heck, maybe that's what you pay for your cable or your streaming service or that family phone plan. Listening to WPR is something you do every day, so put a value on it, like other things that are important to you. Make that contribution at WPR.org or give a call, 888-202-2552.
Stay cozy and show off your public radio pride. Backed by popular demand, the WPR NPR long sleeve t-shirt features logos on the front and a Wisconsin-inspired design on the back. This navy cotton shirt will be your go-to for showing off your support for the WPR programs you rely on. Ask for yours today while supplies last. Give $20 a month or more. Here's how.
Do that at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Rob Ferret here with Molly Stentz on Central Time. Your support during this winter member drive makes the WPR programs you count on possible. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, is the right amount to give.
We know your time is important, so giving to Wisconsin Public Radio takes just a few minutes. Here's how it works. You tell us your name, you give us your contact information, the amount you want to give, and how you'd like to pay.
It's quick and easy to do. Your gift right now really helps. Take the next few minutes to support the station you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, when you think about it, a $10 a month contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, that works out to just be 33 cents a day. What a deal.
Make a gift of $10 a month right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You really do get a lot in return.
We are looking for 7 people to join in this hour. Will that be you? You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Today only, it's the return of the long sleeve WPR shirt. It's a light blue Wisconsin inspired design on a soft navy shirt, perfect for all your favorite winter activities. Get it with your gift of $20 a month or more. Ask for it when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you're not yet a sustainer, become one right now. It's so easy. You can make ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. You can do that online at WPR.org. You can do that by phone, 888-202-2552. Provide reliable support for the programs you love.
Emily in Milwaukee says, I feel more engaged with the communities in the rest of the state after listening to WPR. Supporting public radio is the second best thing I can do for my state next to voting. Emily says, I'm exposed to hearing different political views, which reminds me that WPR is truly balanced and fair. It's a great way to know which politicians really have my best interest in mind. Thank you so much, Emily. How about you? Make your gift right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. President Biden said just a little bit earlier this afternoon that he believes that Russian President Vladimir Putin has already made the decision to attack Ukraine. It could happen in the next several days. While Russia claimed it has pulled back some of its military forces from the border, U.S. intelligence says otherwise, that more troops have actually been brought in. Yesterday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke to the U.N. Security Council, saying this is a crisis that affects everyone.
The basic principles that sustain peace and security, principles that were enshrined in the wake of 2 world wars and a Cold War, are under threat. The principle that one country cannot change the borders of another by force. The principle that one country cannot dictate another's choices or policies or with whom it will associate. The principle of national sovereignty.
John Reuter is an associate professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee. He's also a senior researcher for the Higher School of Economics in Moscow. John, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, no one, I think, can read Putin's mind here. What you're seeing now, what do you think the intentions, the Russian intentions are with this troop buildup on the border with Ukraine?
Yeah, actually, I think that his intentions are pretty clear. He's trying to get concessions out of the West, and specifically to prevent Ukraine from becoming more integrated into the West politically, militarily, economically, and even culturally. That's his main goal. And I think this military buildup is what we might call coercive diplomacy. It's a way to use the threat of an invasion, and maybe even an invasion itself, in order to get a broader set of concessions from the West.
As people try to read Putin, there's everything from he is a chess master who is playing a long game to he is an impulsive gambler who may not know what he wants to do tomorrow. Is there a truth on either side of that?
Well, you know, yes. And I think the irony is that having an image as an impulsive gambler can help you when it comes to international relations to achieve strategic aims. And so I think that by appearing somewhat impulsive or hard to predict, that helps him at the negotiating table. But I do, but stepping back a bit, I do see what's happening in Ukraine right now as part of Russia's broader aims, broader geopolitical aims in the region. I would be hesitant to reduce it simply to one man's kind of Putin's aims and goals in Ukraine.
How do you spell out those aims? What is the goal here? Apart from what you said already about Ukraine and NATO and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, that is the goal. And what I mean is that Ukraine is more than just a piece of territory to Russia. Ukraine has special historical, cultural, symbolic importance to Russia. Of course, it was part of the Soviet Union, but it was also before that a core part of the Russian Empire for much of Russian history. There has, in the minds of most Russians, and to some extent many Ukrainians, there wasn't much distinction between these two countries. And that's not true to the same degree for other countries in Eastern Europe or Central Europe that joined NATO after the end of the Cold War. And it's not even really true to the same extent for many of the other countries in the former Soviet Union, for instance, the Baltics, which have since joined NATO. And so in Putin and I think many Russians' minds, it does constitute something of a red line for them when they see Ukraine becoming more integrated into the West. So militarily, that means, you know, Ukrainian military doing joint drills with NATO countries, and of course the ultimate red line for Russia would be Ukraine joining NATO itself. But also they see Ukraine becoming more more Western, you know, and I think there's a concern about Western or Ukraine becoming more democratic, becoming economically integrated into the EU at some point in the distant future. And so I think what's going on is that at this point, Putin sees an opportunity to at least slow that process down.
To the extent we can gauge public opinion in Russia, you said many Russians would agree that there's some kind of special relationship between Russia and Ukraine. Do you have a sense that they would support a military invasion of Ukraine to back that up?
It's complicated, as everything always is, and the answer is yes and no. The no part of the answer is that polls consistently show that there is not an appetite among Russians for a full-scale invasion of Ukraine or sending troops into Ukraine. Similarly, you can look at polls going back decades now indicating that there's not strong support for annexing Ukraine as a whole and reintegrating into some, you know, Soviet Union redux. However, you know, Russia is an autocracy, and public opinion tends to be malleable in an autocracy like Russia, where the state has a lot of control over people's media diet. And so, you know, it's quite possible that if the Kremlin is able to manufacture a pretext for a military incursion, that public opinion could shift and become supportive of an invasion.
Talking to John Reuter from UW-Milwaukee, looking at the latest news from Russia and Ukraine. You mentioned, John, trying to manufacture a pretext. The reports are now that a lot of Russian media, state-controlled media, are airing what claim to be images of some kind of Ukrainian genocide against Russian speakers in the Donetsk region, disputed currently by a rebel enclave, I guess, within Ukraine. What are you watching for that internal propaganda campaign?
Yeah, I mean, specifically on that genocide point, and this is a term that I think the Russian government overuses. I mean, they use it, and I don't even think they mean it to mean what we usually in common English parlance associate it with. But in terms of the false flag operation that is undoubtedly going on right now. So right now, as we speak, there are explosions going off in the major cities in the Donbass, and Russian media is claiming that these are terrorist attacks that are being undertaken by Ukrainian armed forces and Ukrainian special forces. It's almost certainly the case that that's not true. The biggest sign we've seen just in the past 24 hours that there may be some incursion that's imminent is that the leaders of the separatist regions, this Russian-backed separatist regions, they've called for an evacuation of civilians from these regions. And as we speak, buses are being loaded with civilians heading off to Russia. The reasoning for this evacuation is that Ukraine is about to attack. That's so they say. That seems very unlikely. So it does appear that this would be the type of pretext that Russia would use to engage militarily. However, I would emphasize that invasion is not a binary, given the complicated geopolitical situation in this part of the world, invasion is not a binary choice. What you could see, especially initially, is Russia introducing forces just into the Donbass region, which it had already de facto controlled through its proxies there. And in fact, even though it hadn't admitted it, it already has troops on the ground in that region. So I would expect if there's an incursion, that would be the first stage of it. And that would be then launch the next stage of diplomacy.
Are there specific concessions that you think the West might reasonably make here and that Ukrainian leadership might reasonably make here that would satisfy Russia's demands short of a partial or total invasion?
I think there are. But I doubt that the West is going to make those concessions. So Russia's opening demands were quite extreme. You know, they were demands that NATO put in writing that Ukraine would never be allowed to enter NATO, and that would be in direct contravention of NATO's open door policy, which says that any country that wants to join NATO, if it meets the requirements, should be allowed to join NATO. And so, you know, that would NATO, of course, has been hesitant to make that concession because it would amount to NATO allowing Russia to dictate its own policies. With respect to Ukraine, though, there's also an element of things that Ukraine could concede, but I doubt they will. The main one would be to implement the main elements of the Minsk Accords, the Minsk II Accords, which were peace accords that brought an end to ceasefire to the fighting in the Donbass. And the main part of those peace accords that Ukraine has not implemented is to pass a new constitution, which would decentralize political authority and give more political authority to political independence to the Donbass region. Now, I don't think it's necessary that Ukraine or NATO makes such large concessions for there to be a diplomatic solution to this. I think it's clear that was Russia's opening bid, and Russia does seem keen to engage in negotiations. And I feel quite certain negotiations will continue and some sort of concessions will be made, but not those large concessions.
In our last minute or so, John, as you're watching this, are there things that you think we are either getting wrong or overlooking here in the U.S., maybe especially what you're seeing in the media?
I would say the role of Russian public opinion is really important here. Russia, even though it's an autocracy, the Kremlin is sensitive to public opinion because Putin's power to a large degree depends upon him remaining popular. And so there's been lots of instances in the past when the Kremlin has not pursued a particular policy course because there's been public outcry against it, or they predicted there would be public outcry against it. And so I do think that is a constraint on their behavior, that one of the reasons why they couldn't simply launch, or I don't think they would just simply launch tomorrow a full-scale invasion of Ukraine, as I think that would be quite shocking and upsetting to many Russians at this moment.
John, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's John Reuter, associate professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee. We talked to him about Russia's latest military movements and statements about Ukraine and what could be coming next. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Molly Stentz joins me as a WPR listener. You know you're always going to hear something interesting when you tune in to Central Time. It's all thanks to you and your support. Listeners provide the biggest share of funding for WPR programs. When you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make this program and everything else you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio possible.
And Rob, some breaking news here. We have heard from 11 listeners with gifts to the drive. Thank you so much. We have met our goal. Let's keep the momentum going for the last few minutes of this hour. Make your donation at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
That last conversation, we talked about one of the big international issues going on, U.S. playing a big role with Russia and Ukraine. Heard a perspective from a Wisconsin expert with a lot of insight into the situation, wrapped up with a question I love to ask. What are we? I often include me. What are we in the media overlooking? What do we need to know that maybe we're not talking about? It's an example of the kind of conversation you're going to hear every day on Central Time.
It's so important, and it's made possible because of you. WPR is listener-supported. It's your donation at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You are making conversations like this possible. Choose an amount that works for you. Make a gift.
Today, we're bringing back the USA-made WPR long-sleeve shirt. It has a light blue Wisconsin-inspired design on a soft navy shirt, perfect for all of your favorite winter activities. Ask for your long-sleeve shirt when you make your gift of $20 a month or more right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
My name is Silke Schmidt. I am originally from Germany, and we've lived in Madison since January 2012. For me, radio is really a way to get information. In general, I just really enjoy the variety. I feel like, especially if you're a newcomer to Wisconsin, listening to WPR is just a really good way to be introduced to the state.
Make your contribution today because listener support makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Give now at WPR.org and click donate.
You can make that donation online at WPR.org. You can also call 888-202-2552 to make your donation. In support of the programs you count on, it's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Molly Stentz. Your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio keeps all the programs you enjoy going strong. Whether you give $10 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and we really do count on your gift.
If you've already renewed, thank you so much. Listeners who renew and monthly sustainers, you are the backbone of WPR.
If you haven't given yet, join thousands of other Wisconsin Public Radio members by donating at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you support WPR, it's an investment that gives back. Whether it's the reliable news that you count on, the interesting statewide conversations that you hear, whatever your reason is for listening and supporting WPR, this is a no-risk investment. If you've never given before, become our next new member right now.
Listener support is the largest piece of funding that makes all these programs you enjoy possible. It's a simple equation. We're here because you're here, because you listen, and because you give. Make your first ever gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Let's blow this goal out of the water. Just two more minutes to hear from you, our listener power. 888-202-2552.
If you are a sustaining member, thank you so much. Maybe increase your support today by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose. You can set that up at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Anne in Eau Claire says, I've been listening to public radio since my college days when I discovered this new, fact-filled, and interesting radio station while flipping through the stations 50 years ago. Thanks for being a part of my life for such a long time. Thank you, Anne, for being a part of Wisconsin Public Radio.
How about you? Whether you've been listening for decades or days, make your gift to keep it coming now and on into the future. Choose an amount that works for you and then make your very important gift online. Takes just a few minutes at WPR.org or you can call 888-202-2552. And thanks, thank you so much for your support.